Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi guys, quick one before we get into the episode. This episode is sponsored by Zencastr, which is the production suite that I've used from the very beginning of this podcast. And if you're interested in starting your own podcast, hang around at the end of the episode for our 30% discount referral code. Thanks.
So our podcast is called Right and Wrong.
Are these your notes? These are your notes about what we're going to say?
Anything. Nailed it. Yes, a short answer.
So how many novels did you not finish?
Oh my God, so many.
It was perfect. What's she talking about? This is nonsense.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
This is it, guys. The big secret to getting published is you have to write a good book. You heard it here first. We're going to... Hello and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. I'm Jamie and joining me today is the winner of the RNA's 2022 Joan Hessian Award for New Writers. It's Susie Hull. Hi, Susie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure. And it's great.
Well, thanks for coming on. Congratulations.
Thank
first
you.
First of all, not only on releasing your debut novel, In This Foreign Land, but also on winning this prestigious award alongside it.
Yeah, I know. I was just completely blown away. I had no idea I could ever win something like that. So it was absolute huge thrill for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Now, whatever your follow-up book has big shoes to fill.
Oh, yes. Isn't that the worst thing? Yeah, and book two's are notorious. Yeah.
Well, I've actually not had a debut author on for a few episodes now, so it'll be fun to go back to some of the older questions that I used to ask. But let's start off by hearing about In This Foreign Land. What's it all about?
So it's essentially a World War One romance. It starts off in March 1914, and the heroine heads off to Egypt with her best friend, and she's looking for love. She wants to marry for love, and she bumps into an old friend of hers. It's like they're just on the cusp of their romance. World War One happens, they get torn apart, they promise to meet each other again in London, and then her Edward is... sets off to France, and he's listed as missing, presumed dead. Mm-hmm. You know, the thrust of the novel after that is what happens to the two of them.
A compelling setting for a story and a romance story.
I just have always wanted to write a big romance. Do you know what I mean? Like a real tear my characters apart, you know, just... Something that, you know, really big and dramatic. And obviously, like, World War One has just so much, any war conflict novel, you know, there's just so much there to tear them apart. So it just made a good setting, I should say.
Yes. Yeah. And there's something very grounded about historical settings, things that really happened. It always adds some impact, some emotional weight, that kind of setting. So how long was this story in the making?
Oh, a long time. A long, long, long time. I probably started it about 5 or 6 years ago now.
Wow.
But it was funny, actually. A writer who I would have been in her writing group when I first started it, Carmel Harrington, she's an Irish writer. She, just last week, she sent me an email going, look, Susie, this was the first synopsis you sent me. Look how far it has changed since that. And, you know, she was always a good mentor to me. And I'd sent this first synopsis to her and she'd suggested changes, like a wee bit of here, there and everywhere. But now the actual finished book is just, there's an element still, the World War One love story is still there, and obviously now it is the only part of the novel. But way back when I first started, I had great notions of a dual timeline and, you know, in a contemporary relationship as well. And all of that just changed, you know, yeah. just gone.
So is this the first book or story you've ever written?
No, not written, just published.
Just published. Right. Yeah. But this one is the one that you've been working on for the past 5-ish years.
Yes. Yeah. It went through, I don't know how many different versions of it, but it was really only, it nearly got, it got quite a bit of interest. I nearly thought I was going to be signed up. And then they changed their mind and they suggested that actually, could I go away and rewrite it as pure historical with just the World War One love story? And when I had come so close at that point, I was like, oh, and I was that fed up. I thought, oh, goodness me. So I just put it away and I tried something else. And then, of course, that's when we hit COVID and the lockdown. And I actually then had the time to go back to revisit it. And I tried again and I thought, oh, do I want to do it dual narrative? What do I want to do? But once I started working again, the World War One love story, that was it. And once I'd got it right back to that and figured that whole love story out, that was what worked. So it was worth it.
Yes, it definitely was worth it in the end.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you've written other things before. Is your approach to writing very much you really love an idea and you will stay with that idea for a long, long time? Or was that just with this one?
No, that would be true, actually, because before I wrote this one, I actually first took, I just sort of felt I wanted to write. It was actually about 26 years ago, and my oldest daughter was a baby and I was at home and I was a bit lost, I suppose. I live over here in Northern Ireland, but I didn't grow up here. All my family are in England, and she was a baby. I was at home and I just needed something, to fill my time. And I just started writing bits of stuff. So I started a novel, and it would have been, I suppose, I was quite influenced by Maeve Binchy. So that was a big novel, and it took me probably 15 years to finish it.
Wow.
Yeah. and that was the first novel that I submitted to the RNA's new writing scheme for new writers. But I mean, it was, it took like years and years and years and but again, I just kept at it. And I think new writers have to finish their first book. I think you just have to work through that whole process so you learn how to do it. And then once I'd written that one, I then, that must have been about 8 years or so now. That was when I first submitted that. Then after that, I wrote a Christmas one and submitted that to the new writers scheme. And I've written... I've written a couple of other books. I always wanted to write for Mills and Boone, and I wrote medieval Mills and Boone style books, but I never got picked up with Mills and Boone. But I've always, apart from the Maeve Binchy style family saga, it generally has been my first love would be historical fiction, because that's what I read, that's what I would pick up.
Right. Yeah. So it really sounds like you've been knocking on the publishing door for a long time now.
Yeah.
Was that through sort of various avenues? Have you submitted to agents? Have you done competitions? Have you written directly to publishers and stuff?
Yeah. So whilst I was just sort of messing about with that first very long drawn out novel, which my first reader very kindly said, she described it as a bit like a cardigan that had got like had just sort of enlarged in the wash and it just needed to cut down. But it was about eight years ago when I just thought, no, I really, really, really want to do this. And I I joined two things. One was the RNAs, that's the Romantic Novelists Association, their new writers scheme, which is a fabulous system to join, because every year then you can submit through their scheme, you can submit a full novel if you've got one. And even if you don't have a full novel, you can submit a partial. And then they have readers who will, they try and match you up with the best reader for your genre that you're writing in. And they read your novel and then they send it back with all the comments and advice on how to make it better. And they'll explain which things you're doing well, which things you could, you know, focus on. So every year, you know, you get this like brilliant feedback that you just wouldn't get otherwise. Well, you would if you paid an awful lot of money for it. And the one of the great things about the New Writer Scheme is, you know, it doesn't cost that much. It's affordable for a lot of people. And even if you're somebody who's really keen and you do want to write, they, you know, there've been a lot of years when they've had bursaries if you can't afford to do that. So the New Writer Scheme for me was hugely, hugely key for me. Now, and the other thing I did was I started just trying to reach out to people in Ireland who were also writers. And I connected with, as I said, Carmel Harrington. She writes women's fiction novels, and she had a small writing group. And again, so it was through meeting other writers who also wanted to get published. It's just making those connections, finding your tribe, finding other people who want to do the same as you do, and all of that support and just taking it seriously. You know, so those two things were key. I also got mentored by Sophie Orme through, I don't think it runs any longer, it was called the WOME Mentoring Program. It was really good. And Sophie is, I think she's an editorial director, but she mentored me for 6 months when I first started this novel that that has been published. But, and again, she was she's an industry professional. She did it for free. She took my basic notes. She gave me feedback. And it was the first time, again, that I really felt an industry professional had seen potential in what I was doing and that it was worthwhile to pursue that. So,
I've heard so many people say that one of the most important steps they made from sort of going from being someone who writes as a hobby and going to taking it seriously is getting out there, involving yourself in the community, and as you said, finding your tribe. It's such an important step, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why the Romantic Novelist Association has been just amazing as well. I mean, even the first year that I went to the summer conference, and I remember I sat on the very first night I got there. I didn't know anybody about, apart from one author who I'd come with from Ireland. We'd flown in together. And I sat down next to Liz Fenwick at the dinner. And I was like, oh, it's Liz Fenwick. I was like, wow, this is just amazing. And she was so nice. And we would still see each other. And she's just so lovely. And, you know, and she, you know, you find that within the writing community that the older writers who have more books published, you know, they are so supportive and they do help, you know, and encourage the new writers to keep going. So, yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
That's exactly it, because it's one of those things where a lot of them had that support when they were kind of getting into the industry. So the way to sort of pay it back is that they want to be there to support up and coming younger authors.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I know. Yes. And I, you know, I would always try and do the same thing, even though I don't have much experience yet. But yeah, it's just encouraging people and being showing them different opportunities and encouraging them to, for example, join the New Writers Scheme, because if anybody's listening, that's a great thing to join.
Yes, indeed. Or just anything that the RNA is doing that's a really, really good organization.
Yeah.
I was actually lucky enough to have Liz has been on the podcast before. She's such a lovely person who has such a sort of generous mindset in terms of giving back to the writing community.
That's right. And Julie Cohen, she was on last week with you, I think, as well.
Oh, I've had a lot of the RNA alumni on.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Going back to building your tribe, creating, you know, that support system around you, do you have an agent?
I don't have an agent.
Have you?
At the moment.
through the sort of many years that, that you've been pushing to get into, to break into publishing, have you gone through sort of various stages of reaching out and submitting to agents?
A good couple of years ago when I thought I could get the dual timeline novel published, I would have tried agents and publishers. And as I said, I had a near miss with one publisher. I did try agents. I went to different events, maybe where you got a one-to-one with an agent, which was really good, but I always just got a knockback. I do remember after one of the RNA's conferences, wait for this, an agent actually gave me their card. And did I follow it up? No, I didn't, because I didn't know who they were. But that's not a good thing to do. If an agent gives you their card, please follow it up. That would have been sensible. But anyway, I didn't. So I have done agent one-to-ones in the past. At the moment, yes, I am definitely looking for an agent.
So you are in the market?
I am in the market, yes.
Open to an agent at the moment?
Yes, I am. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. In This Foreign Land, it's out with Orion Dash.
Yes. So that's their digital imprint.
Okay. So Orion Dash, digital first publisher, did that come to fruition through a direct submission?
Yes, it did. Generally it did. Again, it was through, I got a one-to-one appointment through, I keep plugging them, the RNA Summer Conference. It was during COVID, and I had a one-to-one appointment with Charlotte Mercel, who is, I actually thought she was with a different publisher, but anyway, they tend to move. But she read my submission, and she liked it. I sent it to her in the December of that year, I can't remember which year now, 2020 maybe. And she read it and she really liked it. And she says, look, I really love it, but I'm going to pass it on to the Dash, which is the digital imprint. And so that's where I got my big break.
Got it. Was it a single book deal? They just sort of contract that one book, or is it a multi? Do they sort of say, "Oh, we'll take two books from you"?
Yeah, it's a two book deal. So,
oh great.
So yeah, so I have another book due out this autumn time sometime soon. So, so it's called. Do you want to talk about it?
I would love to talk about it. Tell us about it.
Oh, good. Right. So it's called Far Across the Ocean. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I actually picked that title myself, which is quite rare because a lot of the time the publishers change the titles. Okay.
Yes.
So I spent a lot of time thinking about this one, and I had got different titles, and then I came up with this one, and I checked on Amazon, was there another book with the same title, and I didn't find one. So I thought, well, that would be good. So it's set in practically the same time slot as the first book in This Foreign Land. So, far across the ocean, the answers to her past and present lie far across the ocean. In 1914, it's set in, starts off in Bradford, and then it moves to Madagascar, and then to France. Mm. So it's about this. The heroine is Clara. She's been jilted at the altar, and then when that falls through, she's just like, right, no, that's it. I'm done. I'm doing this my own way now. And she, you know, so it's a real moment that she has to stop and think, what does she actually want to do? So she wants to go back to the place where she felt was home for her and where she was happy. And that is back in Madagascar. And then, of course, there's always a love story in there as well.
I was waiting for the romance.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a romance because she is escorted to Madagascar with this very nice Frenchman. And I mean, it's not just about a love story this time. It's sort of about home, you know, where is your home? Where do you feel your home is? It's not just four walls. It's, you know, where do you feel at home? And it's also about it's about motherhood as well. There's different characters in it who all want to be mothers, and it's a different, you know, different ways that you can be a mother, not in a way that maybe you thought you would in the future, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. And that's out later this year, was that?
It's out in, I don't have a date for it exactly yet, but, you know, the autumn time sometime.
Okay, great. How exciting. What a year you're having.
Yeah. Yes, I know. And I'm going to be 51 this year. So it was, you know, it does feel like a standout time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. After so many years of writing, have you got a good sort of routine, a good setup for your writing?
No. No.
It's a bit chaotic.
Well, so my day job, I'm a classroom assistant. So when school is on, I work 9 to 2 every day. Now, my family are grown up, although there's quite a few are still working from home. So for a long time there, I wouldn't even have had the house was never quiet. I mean, you know, they're still here, they're still working, they're in and out. But obviously they don't need me just the same way when they were toddlers. So, you know, I have set myself up in the dining room. I'm on the dining table because I need a big space to spread myself out. And you know, I have post-it notes and files and research books. I love an awful lot of nonfiction, and I would pick that up. And I like to have things set around me that I can see, that I know that I was working on. And, you know, I'm not a person that puts it all in files on the laptop. I need physical things, you know, to open up and see my notes and things like that. Yeah. And so I've basically taken over the dining room, really. Wow. And yeah, I know. And basically then I just write when I can, which might be after school if I come home and I'm feeling fresh, or I might need a nap, which happens quite a bit. Yeah, naps are good. Naps are good. So it could be at the weekend. I mean, obviously, if I've got edits, you actually have to get that done. But I mean, school holidays are great for getting fresh words down, you know, so that's what I'm doing at the moment. And, you know, and it is, I am very lucky working in a school that I do have so much free time, I suppose.
Yes. Are there any sort of writing tips or strategies that you wish you'd discovered many years ago when you sort of first started taking writing seriously?
I think I read all the books that ever exist on how to write.
Okay.
And how to plot. And in actual fact, I did a book doctor session with Alison May, who is really good on things like this. She really helped me fix the last bit of my novel. And she says, you know, I really don't think you actually know your heroine. And I was like, of course I do. But I'd spent so long plotting that I'd actually forgotten to actually think who my main character was, what would she actually do? Once I'd actually stopped and thought, actually, if I was her in that position, this is what I would do. And that was what made the difference for me. So actually really think all these how to write books are great, and we, you know, they are really helpful, but actually just stopping a minute and thinking really hard about your main character and who, you know, how they drive it and what they're doing in it. And just I know people say it's time and again, but you really, really, really do need to know your characters.
Yeah. You got to connect with them on an emotional level.
Yeah.
So that they're not just sort of going down the marked path that you've created for the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It has to feel authentic. And once you really get that authenticity, I think that's just what lifted it to a different level.
Yeah. Well, that's really good advice, just to sort of take a step back and reevaluate what you're doing. Keep it, you need to sort of look at the simple things before you get lost in the weeds of complications and mad schemes.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to really cut it back. You know, like I must have written a good 300,000 words, and, you know, so many times I stopped and cut it right back to 20,000 and set off again. I mean, you know, that whole book just doesn't look like what it started out as, but, you know, I didn't give up. I think that's the main thing. I could have thrown it in the bin, but I just kept going.
Yeah.
Stopping maybe, but.
Well, you cut an entire timeline out of that book.
Yeah, so. I did. And every time then I rewrote it, the ending changed. Mm-hmm. You know, so you just, it just was, you know, just keep going and wait till you really feel it's right. It'll feel right. And, you know, yeah, but you just have to be prepared to do that. Don't be thinking that just because you've got to the end, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for new writers as well, it's like, it's so scary thinking they've got to the end and someone tells them to change it.
Like, yes. Exactly. You always need to be open to different ideas, especially if you're going through a traditional publishing route where you are going to get put with an editor and the editor is most likely going to ask you to change things.
Yeah. You can't be, I mean, there's some things you can die on, but at the same time, don't be too precious either. It depends what you want. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to get published. I mean, that was very clear to me. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And I could have gone ahead and self-published the dual timeline one, but I just wanted that affirmation that I was doing it right and that the book was right.
Yeah. And when you do work with editors, when you work with publishers, when you work with agents, they always have the story's best interest at heart. The changes that they're suggesting, the changes that they're asking you to make are always to try and get the best out of the story. They're never doing it to try and sort of sabotage you or ruin the story.
Yeah.
And it's always the mindset, I think it's healthiest to sort of remember that.
Yeah. And my editor now, Rhea Currian, like even the extra things that she suggested or in this foreign land, and it was just like, yeah, that, you know, those extra little layers and little tiny things that people wouldn't even know hadn't been there.
Yeah.
Like 2 months beforehand, that just made such a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a lot of great advice, a lot that people can take from that. And that brings us nicely onto the final question, which is, as always, Susie, if you were stranded on a desert island with a single book, which book would it be?
Right. So it is Daphne du Maurier's The King's General.
Okay.
Yeah. I just love it. There's so much going on, and it has just so many threads in it. And it's romance, but it's not just romance, and it's historical. And just lovely.
A great choice. And I can just, from our short conversation here, I can tell that really fits you. Historical romance. It's great that you love your genre. You really love it.
Yeah, no, I do. Yeah, it's what I get up for every day.
Well, thank you so much, Susie. Thanks for coming on and sharing your experience and your writing journey with me and everyone listening. It's been great.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Jamie.
And for anyone listening, if you want to keep up with what Susie is doing, you can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at SusieHull1. As always, big shout out to the RNA. Definitely check them out if you're looking to involve yourself more within writing communities in the industry. And to make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow us on Twitter at WrightAndWrongUK or on Instagram at WrightAndWrongPodcast. Thanks again to Susie, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks for hanging around until the end. If you're interested in starting your own podcast but aren't really sure what that looks like, I can't recommend Zencastr enough. It's so simple to host, record, and download your podcast with, and it even has a built-in transcription AI. It functions entirely in the internet browser, which means all your guests have to do is click on a link and they'll be brought into the conversation. If you click on the link in the description, you'll get 30% off the first 3 months. All you have to do is click on the link in the description. Thanks again for supporting the show, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.